You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of Locked On Grizzlies, previewing the Grizzlies this year with all the different media members that cover the Grizzlies around the city of Memphis. We're going to talk with David Cobb today, beat writer for the Commercial Appeal, a good friend of mine, comes on the show quite often. You guys probably recognize his voice on this show. We'll talk with him, but first, make sure you go and subscribe to Locked On Grizzlies and whatever platform you choose, Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple iTunes. If you're in Apple iTunes, make sure you go and rate and rank the review and review the show. It really helps the show in iTunes rankings as well. Dave, what's going on, man?
Oh, man, not much. Getting ready for training camp. It's right around the corner, and I'm kind of ready. You know, had some downtime now to recover from the madness that was this Grizzlies offseason, and kind of ready to dive in and sort of see where things are headed with this bunch.
I can't wait. I was checking your Twitter feed for a link to your last article we're about to talk here in a minute about, and I realized that Rob Fisher tweeted that there's a game in 20 days, and that was yesterday.
Yeah.
It's a game in 15 days.
Yeah, absolutely.
For all of us basketball psychopaths that have to have basketball all the time, I cannot wait. It feels like it's been entirely too long, although the NBA has done a much better job making it a year-round sport. I mean, it feels like, you know, we just had all of these stuff in free agency not that long ago because it wasn't that long ago. So they've done a really good job of making it a year-round sport and not just, you know, once the finals end in June, that's just it until training camp. So kudos to them, because I know that you as well as myself and anybody else that we've talked to on this show are really ready for it to get back. I want to start with I alluded to this article here in a minute. It's an article about Marco Gudurich. We haven't really talked about him much on the show. We were just starting this first segment by talking about the past and the offseason, but we've talked about that several different shows. So I want to start with you and talk about Marco Gudurich. You had this article. It's over at commercialappeal.com. If you haven't already read it, make sure you go check it out. But it's all about Marco, what he think, you know, his different games. You watched them all, and what can he be in the NBA? So tell us, since we probably all didn't watch these games, we're relying on you, David Cobb. Tell us, is Marco Gudurich going to be a role player in the NBA?
The potential's there. I was impressed with the fact that he is, offensively, he is more than just a shooter. I think what all of us did when this name started surfacing as a potential offseason signing for the Grizzlies is we go and find whatever information we can about him on the internet. And that's pretty limited when it's a guy who's played in the EuroLeague and isn't really that old. I mean, he's only 24, right. So I know he's been with the Serbian national team in some regard throughout his career, but it's not even like this is a guy who we've seen in past Olympics or a guy who was previously drafted, who we've kind of looked into or there, you know, have seen published reports about, you know, on the state side. And so, you know, the first thing we do is we go and we Google, and what do we see about Marco Gudurich? Well, we see that he shot like some crazy percentage this season for his EuroLeague team. And we're like, okay, well, this guy is a shooter. And that's right. The generalization that we make. And after watching every game that he played in the FIBA World Cup for a really good team in Serbia, it is true. It is true. He is a shooter. That is why the Grizzlies are signing him. I can say that with a high level of confidence, is because he's an outside threat. But he can do more for you offensively in terms of playmaking and passing than just standing on the wing or standing in the corner and making catch and shoot three. So that's kind of my major takeaway, and I'm happy to go into the intricacies of everything he can do, because even in my story, I wasn't able to go into the full detail. I looked up and I was like, wow, this thing is 1,100 words. Does anybody really want to read 1,100 words about Marco Gudurich? I don't know. Yeah. So yeah. Even I was getting bored. But like I said, I watched it all. I have sort of the head knowledge of it. And while I'm not an international NBA scout, I feel like I kind of gleaned enough to maybe give some sort of insight into the player he might be able to be.
What are your biggest concerns about Mark? I know that the immediate always thought, like you mentioned, as soon as we hear about a name like that, you and everybody else and not myself did the same thing. We all go try to find out what we can. And I think But I think the takeaway from international players is always everybody's always concerned with the defensive mm-hmm. liability, the foot speed, because it is a different pace, it's a different game in the NBA. Is that something that you think is going to be a concern, or what are your biggest? You think are his biggest concerns going to be once he gets to the Grizzlies?
That'll be a concern if that'll be a concern with him playing extended minutes. If they get into a situation where, you know, they feel like they need to play him extended minutes, or that could be the thing. If all else goes well for him, and he kind of is in line to get a big time role with the Grizzlies, that can be the thing that holds him back ultimately. Is that I think over the course of time, if he plays more than 13 minutes or a night or so, I think he could become a defensive liability. In that, in those extended minutes, the sort of negative on the defensive side could outweigh the positive of what he brings offensively. But if you look at it on paper, he actually does have sort of the measurables of, you know, a versatile NBA defender, because he's 6'6" and because he's, you know, close to 220 pounds. So, you know, he does have the measurables of being able to guard a one and then not being totally overmatched against the four. But after having watched him, the sort of explosivity, I guess, I'm worried about the quickness element of it. You know, I don't know if he ends up getting switched on to a point guard or having to pick up at De'Aaron Fox. Well, anybody's going to struggle to stay in front of De'Aaron Fox. But I think if De'Aaron Fox sees Mark Gudurich on him at the beginning of a possession, he's going to be licking his chops and taking the ball to the hole. You know, and I think also that the same goes for if he gets switched on to a taller, a more versatile wing who's 6'8 or 6'9, that's a problem as well. The generalization of those international players fits with what I've seen in this case, and that will be kind of my biggest question about Gudurich, is if he plays extended minutes, how can they mitigate what could be some liabilities with him on the defense side?
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of those guys, and it happens something in the end. Sometimes you're able to hide them, you know, on different players on the defensive end. You're able to maximize your exploits on the offensive end while minimizing the liabilities, like I mentioned, on the defensive end. So that'll all be up to Taylor Jenkins and what he's able to do with him on the floor. What do you think coming in right away his role is with the Grizzlies? Is it just shooter and then it expands as you can do more things, or – what do you see him doing right away for the Grizzlies? Is he going to get consistent minutes right away for the Grizzlies?
I don't know. I'd be surprised. There's so many players that are kind of in the mix at the wing. I mean, you've got Dylan Brooks, you got Josh Jackson, you got Grayson Allen, you've got Marco Gudurich, you got, you know, Kyle Anderson, you got all these players who are sort of versatile and you play the two or the three or whatever. And, you know, with Kyle Anderson, he can literally play any position on the floor, I think. But, you know, that position where he's coming in is so unsettled. You know, not to mention like a two-way guy and John Conchar, who will, of course, in training camp get a look and stuff. So, you know, Bruno can kind of play out on the perimeter some, although he's probably in this offense more of a four, I guess, maybe. But yeah, it's so wide open. You know, I almost feel like they have to give him a shot to play some minutes early in the regular season because they made this 2-year commitment to him. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean he'll be on the roster for 2 full seasons, but it's a guaranteed 2-year contract. And so you have to give him a chance, I think. I think we've seen in the past, right, where they make the sort of contractual commitment to a guy like that and he doesn't really even ever doing anything. But, you know, I would think with this new front office, as savvy as they've been, as many – seemingly good news that they've made, you know, they must have a real good sense that this is somebody who can contribute. And I think he's different than any other player on the roster. I think he's probably a better shooter than anybody, a better natural shooter than anybody on the roster. And in terms of how defenses will treat him differently than they treat any other player on the Grizzlies roster. Because you go down that list of wings that I went through, there's nobody else in that group who an assistant coach is going to be standing up for the opposing team and be yelling, shooter, shooter, every time they get the ball. Marco Gudurich is literally the only player on the Grizzlies roster who's going to have that sort of identity on the opposing scouting report. So I think he just brings something different in that regard, and he knows that too. It was evident through watching him play in FIBA that when teams close out aggressively on him, which most of them do after he checks into the game, or if they realize that he's checked into the game after the first or second possession, they do start closing out aggressively on him. He's a guy who can put the ball on the floor and play make and get in front of his man, which creates passing lanes. Now, the one thing that I'll say is that he can put his man on his back and dribble and be creative with the ball, but he can't really finish at the rim that well. So while he is creative enough to kind of get into the lane and to slash and to do more than just shoot after he catches the ball, he's not going to make explosive finishes at the rim. So the two things that impressed me the most, aside from just shooting, were his ability to, you know, to kind of create a little bit, get around his man and dish, and then also just to pass the ball to the right guy on the perimeter. He ignited a lot of good offensive possessions for them by whipping the ball around and being the part of some really good ball movement. So a couple of things there that stood out.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you mentioned this really quickly, but I think it's something to note that this front office has been very shrewd and is very adept at making, as we've seen this in this very short summer, making quality moves for the franchise. And if you invest 2 years in a guy like Marco Goodrich, they clearly have some kind of inkling. They know, obviously always know more than we do, but they clearly see something in him that makes them go, huh, this could really make it worth this deal to go in and, you know, go in and lock him in 2 years instead of giving him a veteran's minimum in 1 year and trying to make it as small as possible and leave, you know, make it as mitigate the disaster if as much as possible if it did go that route. So that's something that's telling as well, like you mentioned, that they clearly have something that they think they have something in Marco Goodrich. Let's change gears a little bit. I want to talk about Andre Iguodala. Obviously, I know we've talked him on the show a ton. Everybody's talked about it. Everybody's written about it. But I still think it serves purpose to talk about it now because I think it's impacting more than just Andre Iguodala at this point. Clearly, the Grizzlies want him on the roster to keep him through probably December 15th, as most people have noted. Do you think this is a good idea to go and keep him for the sake of having to cut something else, waive someone else off that roster? Or do you think it, the back of the roster is so minimal it doesn't really matter?
Yeah, I don't think it's a great idea, but before I explain why, don't take my thinking that it's not a great idea to mean that the Grizzlies are somehow villains for having Andre Iguodala on the roster. Something I wrote a couple weeks ago that the Grizzlies fan base seemed to appreciate was after the Shams tweet about how the Grizzlies were, you know, not going to allow him to finish his career on his terms, you know, the future Hall of Famer Andre Iguodala, all this stuff. You know, I kind of made the point of, hey, the Grizzlies have done well by veteran players. They traded Mike Conley and Marcus Gasol to contenders. They traded Marcus Gasol to the team that won the NBA title. So the Grizzlies are not villains here. The villain here is the Golden State Warriors, who, after 6 years together with Andre Iguodala, could have traded them to a contender or could have honored the final year of his contract and let him finish out with a franchise where he won 3 championships and won an NBA Finals MVP. Instead, they made a rush move to bring in D'Angelo Russell, which required them, I guess in their minds, to pawn off Andre Iguodala to the Grizzlies. So I don't think the Grizzlies are villains here in any way. However, I'm not totally sold that taking him into the season on the roster is really the right move. One, if he's not going to play, you know, that's a dead roster spot. And if he is going to play, you're still taking a roster spot from a younger player. It would be kind of a shame to see Bruno have to go away because of the fact that Andre Iguodala is going to be on the roster. Now, I don't know for sure that Bruno would be the guy, but as it shapes up now, you know, Ivan Rad and Bruno would kind of be the odd man out. Certainly, I think you can make the case that Solomon Hill should be an odd man out, but because he has a larger expiring contract, he could hold some value to them closer to the trade deadline. And so I don't know for sure that they would look at releasing him on such a large deal. So I don't know that it's completely wise for them to do it, but I do think that they're wise to, I guess, kind of make teams have to call their bluff. And if teams, you know, who were hoping to get Andre Iguodala on the cheap after he got bought out by the Grizzlies, and they really want him and they're worried that he's not going to get bought out, well, maybe they're going to be willing to cut a deal that's really favorable for the Grizzlies. And maybe the return in that deal will be way more valuable than Bruno Caboclo or whoever the odd man out is. And they're pretty confident that that's the case and that they can get a return for Iguodala that is more valuable than whatever they have to cut for that 15th spot to keep Iguodala into the season, then they're well within their rights and their bounds to, you know, kind of hold out until that time. I don't see any problem with that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, it is a situation where, you know, I personally would, I'd say just keep him in LA wherever he's at. Doesn't need to come here, because I think it's a waste of a roster spot. It's a waste of minutes, quite frankly, if they want him here playing. I mean, there's too many other players like
mentioned that they got. In theory, there is some value to having a 35-year-old former NBA Finals MVP, former All-Star, well-respected veteran presence on the team. It's going to take, already got rid of CJ Miles and Kyle Korver, you know. If Iguodala's not on the roster, does that make, Jay Crowder the oldest player on the team maybe? And he's like 29, you know. So, like, there is some value to that, but, taking minutes.
I mean,
there's
value, sure, but it on this team and this year, I don't think that matter. You know, like, they're going to lose a lot anyway. That doesn't, you know, there's some value in understanding how to win games as a young rookie, as a young player. There's some value there, but at $17 million, is that really the value? You know,
yeah.
I think you could go do a minimum salary, and you could bring back, you know, you could bring out Noah if you wanted to really have that kind of value on the team.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
For you know, a fraction of the cost, if they really wanted.
Yeah, poor Joakim didn't end up getting picked up by the Lakers. Grizzly for life, Dwight Howard beat him out for that spot.
Yeah, we're gonna have to have a reunion tour for Dwight Howard, though. One of the former Grizzlies.
They'll get a great standing ovation at FedEx Hall, I'm sure.
Absolutely, I can't wait till he comes back and visits where he roamed for so long and was so great.
I'm wondering if he sold his house in Memphis.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We will talk about all the young players this team has on the roster, and it has a lot of them. So we'll try to get through some of them, what we expect for them on the year. Welcome back to the show. Talking to David Cobb, beat writer for the Commercial Appeal on the show. We talked a lot about Marco Gudrich in the first segment. I talked a lot about Andre Iguodala there, but I want to focus on this team's younger players. As we both mentioned in the previous segment, they got a lot of them. They got a lot of decisions to make this year. A lot of the players, Dylan Brooks is going to be a restricted free agent if they make him, you know, if they decide to extend the qualifying offer. Josh Jackson, Grayson Allen have options. And there's just a lot of decisions that have to be made at the end of the year. Obviously, Jaren is a big part of this. Obviously, Jaw's a big part of this. But I want to start with Grayson Allen and Josh Jackson first. I think there's some guys that could have high ceilings if they get it together. But the real question is, will Grayson Allen and Josh Jackson get it together?
Yeah, I mean, I'm more optimistic about Jackson than I am about Allen, because I feel like we've seen more flashes of that capability with Jackson than we have with Allen. And it feels like the off-the-court stuff is probably weighing on Jackson in a way that once he can get some of that sorted out and get plugged into a good, you know, culture organizationally, you know, maybe he can kind of turn the corner. With Grayson Allen, I just don't know that we've seen the flashes. And remember, this is the guy who was a four-year college player. So he's not a spring chicken. He's not 21. He's like 23 or 24. I'd have to double check, but he's not super young necessarily. And I'm more of the opinion that Josh Jackson could end up being that guy. Well, another reason for that is that, you know, Grayson Allen is going to be more limited defensively, generously listed at 6'5", a little under 200 pounds. Josh Jackson's like 6'8", and I'm pretty sure he's over 200 pounds. So he's going to be more versatile for you defensively. And I think could maybe kind of jive with this new group a little bit. Now, you know, maybe there's a place for Grayson Allen. Maybe Memphis ends up embracing it because maybe, you know, his sort of villainous ways, you know, is paired with enough on the court stuff, can be something that this place embraces. But I'm very skeptical of that, you know, going into training camp. I still feel like there's a lot that we need to see before, you know, anyone proclaims Grayson Allen as a piece for this team going forward.
Yeah, Grayson Allen is, you know, he obviously got thrown out of summer league, which is difficult to do.
Amazing.
It is a difficult thing to do for Grayson Allen. And to be quiet, to be fair to Grayson Allen and Josh Jackson, Grayson Allen has done nothing in the NBA. I mean, he's played one or two games. I mean, he's done nothing in the NBA. So there's no difference between Grayson Allen and really like De'Anthony Melton, because we just really don't even know. And just, the only difference is the name. The only difference is you know who Grayson Allen is because that's where he went to college and tournament. But as far as NBA experience, there's no difference.
Yeah, well, maybe Grayson Allen is playing chess here, because maybe he gets thrown out of that summer league game for going off and hacking Grant Williams a couple times, and maybe he's like, you know what? Most Memphis fans don't like Grant Williams because he played at Tennessee, and there's a big Memphis-Tennessee basketball rivalry. So maybe if I, you know, if I'm sort of villainous towards Grant Williams, I'll gear myself to the Grizzlies fan base. I think maybe he was thinking two steps ahead.
If that's the case, he's playing like 3D chess, and we're playing something way different.
Oh, gosh. I keep trying to find ways to, like have something, like, really positive to say about Grayson Allen, but he's made it hard. I mean, you know, after that first summer league game, he had gotten a text in the first summer league game that he played in. It wasn't the game where he got thrown out. It was their second game in Vegas, and it was the first time that he was eligible to play. And he got a tech during the game. Well, I didn't even ask him about the tech after the game, because I didn't want to make it about that. I wanted the story to be about, you know, him being traded to the Grizzlies and was he wanting off the Grizzlies and all that stuff. And I was like, you know what, some of that trivial stuff from his past as well, that's in the past. You know? And then here he comes out the next game and gets ejected. So I'm still kind of looking for the carrot with Allen, trying to see exactly, okay, what is there to this guy that makes him something that could be a part of his Grizzlies future?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely doesn't make it easy for the people who have to talk about him, for people who have to write about him. He doesn't make it easy on himself. That's for sure, because there's not much else for to say than go, well, he's done this before. I guess he's just going to continue to do this. And so I'm with you. Until he shows me something, you know, as far as just even being a grown up, until he shows us something that he can, you know, get a hard foul in the NBA and not lose it. Because in this league, if you get a hard foul and you lose it on someone like Zach Randolph or Tony Allen, you might get stabbed, or, you know, like, seriously, you might get beat up after the game. So, I mean, he, you know, he's got to just – it's NBA. It's a different league. It's different. It's a whole different animal. So, you know, until he shows me something, I kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. And it's interesting your take on Josh Jackson. I've asked people about Josh Jackson on the show, and I've gotten everything from he's going to be the guy that gets cut for Andre Iguodala to people think that he's going to be the most impressive, you know, kind of the most standout-ish player of the year. So it's
I think they should take a chance on him. I think they should see if he works. Now, they've got a tough petition, because if I'm not mistaken, his option for the 2020-2021 season, so for the following season, that option comes up like very early into this season, if I'm reading that correctly. So they're going to have to make a decision about his future pretty early on into his tenure. I'm of the opinion, why not take a chance? We've seen people come to Memphis and turn things around before. He's a guy that has shown flashes, that maybe just needed a change of scenery, who maybe needs some, you know, just some kind of people who can invest in him and believe in him freshly once again. And, you know, maybe he can be a part of it. I think they should give him a chance. I'm not totally convinced that they will. That's just my opinion, that I think they should. And maybe they won't. And if they don't, I'm sure they'll have good reasons for not doing so. But I still think that there could be, you know, something out there for him with the Grizzlies. And if I'm wrong about that, then you know, no harm, no foul. But I'm just kind of looking at it from afar, having not really seen him in a Grizzlies practice uniform or anything yet. On paper, it seems like something worth taking a chance on.
Well, if you're the Grizzlies, and if you're any team in the NBA, really, you have to go out and you have to find those guys. You gotta go out and find the bottom of the barrel guys who, you know, maybe didn't work in one system, but work in another system, didn't work in another city, or the two-way guys that you know nobody thought was good and they end up, you know, in a right situation are very good. So you have to be adept at filling out the back of your roster with those type of guys for not a lot of money. That's if you want to be a good team, you have to draft well. You have to, you know, go out and find those type of guys, and, you know, if you get lucky, you can add a superstar free agent, and that's how you're able to win championships. So not only the Grizzlies have to do that, every team has to do that, but the Grizzlies, like you mentioned, they're going to be bad this year anyway. So maybe you take a chance on Josh Jackson and see what you get. Another guy that we mentioned previous, you know, just very briefly is Dylan Brooks. Obviously, he's going to be a restricted free agent this year if they extend the qualifying offer to him. What do you think Dylan Brooks is in the NBA? Is he a starter, role player? What do you think he is ultimately?
I have no idea. that's the honest truth. I have no idea. That's, to me, one of the greatest mysteries of this season. Because in a positive scenario, he steps up, returns to the form that he showed as a rookie, even progresses beyond where he was as a rookie, and establishes himself as a clear part of this team moving forward. I think the fans love him. That's what the fans want. The fact that guy played every game during one of the worst seasons, you know, in franchise history, I think he earned some street cred around here for the way he handled himself as a rookie. And he just had a really bad run of bad luck last season. And so I'd really just throw out anything that we saw from him last season. I don't take any numbers that he posted last season to mean anything, to be honest. And so I have no idea, because it's a totally different system now. This is a totally different front office. You might have a totally different vision or assessment of him than the one that brought him in. And so I have no idea what to make of Dylan Brooks. I know what a positive outcome would be, kind of what I laid out. He becomes a part of this team, a clear part of this team moving forward. But he's got a lot of competition now. He kind of was established going into last season, even though he wasn't a full-time starter in the season. But going into this season, I don't feel like he's established anymore, and that's not because it's his fault. He had a lot of bad luck, and there was a lot of turnover on the coaching staff and in the front office. So I have no idea what to make of Dylan Brooks. I do know that he probably has a leg up in terms of the public view of him, for whatever that matters. But in terms of if the competition is Grayson Allen and Josh Jackson, in terms of public perception, I think everybody would like to see Dylan Brooks come out the winner among that trio.
Yeah, I think, you know, hopefully he returns, like you mentioned, his form as kind of a – even his rookie season, he started off, you know, not great, but he really rounded out at the end of the year. So hopefully he can return to form. I mean, he's had some bad luck there, none of which, like you mentioned, is his fault. The other guy I want to talk about before we wrap up this segment, Kyle Anderson. And I don't think it's a guy that has been talked about quite often, really, at all. I don't spend a lot of time talking about him, but, you know, he's a guy that had surgery in the off season, is a guy that was hurt large part of that, you know, into that last year. You've heard anything about Kyle Anderson is on track to play? I think that's, as far as I know, that's the plan, but I don't know if you've had anything different. But
yeah, I think so. I mean, I've not heard anything to indicate that his rehab hasn't gone well. I would expect him to be out there when training camp breaks here in a couple of weeks. So, I think with Kyle, he's just kind of going to end up being the Swiss Army knife for this team. And I know there's some hope that he'll run point, you know, by some people. But I just think that he's going to end up being a player who they plug him in where they need a spot filled. And that could be, I mean, that, like I said, that can literally be any position on the floor. I mean, with Taylor Jenkins, I don't think it's out of the picture that he could be a small ball five in some cases. Wow. I mean, he played very limited minutes in that position due to foul trouble or injuries on given nights early last season. That was more of an emergency thing. But if they're going to play with pace and space, which is the term that Taylor Jenkins has used on more than one occasion, you know, he could be a guy that is in the front court legitimately in some scenarios. Not all the time, I think. But so he can literally, I think, play anywhere. So will he find a permanent home in a specific role? I don't know, because there's so many moving parts of this roster that might be kind of hard out of the gate with this club. But, you know, I'm not ready. I know some people are, well, I don't know if he fits with the new team. He was signed when they were playing the old way. Yeah, I get that. But, I mean, I think for somebody as versatile as he is, there will be a role for him. It may just not be a very well specifically defined role. It may be a very versatile Swiss Army knife kind of role.
Yeah, all those people that want him to play point forward, those are me. I am all the people.
Yeah. Well, you have influence because I see other people kind of parrot that. And I think there's some merit to it. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, with Ja and with Tyus Jones, those guys are guys that need the ball in their hands. Those are guys that they're paying a lot of money. You know, they're going to be on the court, and, you know, maybe there will be times when they can kind of play that role. Ja, especially, will need to learn how to play off the ball. You know, and I think Kyle can be effective in that role, but I don't know that they're going to carve out a sort of heavy minutes kind of role for him in that regard. But gosh, it's nice to have somebody who can facilitate the offense, you know, when yep. things break down, or, you know, operate out of the high post, or, you know, whatever. So with as many things that he can do on a team like this, he's going to find minutes somewhere.
Well, if there's anybody on the team, I think most people would agree with this. If there's anybody on the team that you need as a plug and play guy, Kyle Anderson is a guy I trust to do that. Like just to go out and do whatever needs to be done. Like you mentioned, the minutes may vary or positions may vary from night to night, depending on what they're trying to do, who they're trying to get minutes for, because they're not going to be minutes for everybody every night. Like Grayson Allen is not going to play every night. Josh Jackson is not going to play every night. They're going to be people just sitting out. And so every night you need Kyle playing the 2, 3, 4, and it just, you know, this is all different. And so if there's a guy on the roster to be able to just kind of plug and play and trust to do those things, it's Kyle Anderson. I would trust him to do those things for sure.
And he doesn't seem to mind it either. That was one thing that stood out last season is there were a couple nights where he got back-to-back 10 rebound games. And I asked him, like, yep. are you like kind of like try, like, is this an emphasis of yours, or are they like asking you to do this? And he, I forget exactly what he said, but he, you know, something like his dad always used to tell him to, or the first thing that his dad looks at when he sees a box score from one of Kyle's games is rebound. And, you know, it didn't bother him to have to do that. And he went out yep. and did it in a couple of instances when they really needed it. And so to me, the fact that he's kind of willing to play that role is a huge key, because if he said, no, by golly, I'm a point forward, or no, by golly, like I'm going to, you know, whatever, be a small forward, you know, but he doesn't pigeonhole himself. I mean, this is the reason he's gotten to where he is because he's kind of willing to embrace that. And I expect that to
Yeah, and it's something the Grizzlies are going to need for sure throughout the rest of the season. Let's take one more break. We'll be right back. We'll get David's depth chart, starting lineups, and win total coming up next. Welcome back to the show. Talking with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal, the beat writer over there for the Grizzlies. This will wrap up this segment. We've gotten everybody's kind of starters. Give us your starters, maybe the first couple guys up off the bench for you on opening night. Not the whole bench, but just the first couple of guys up off the bench for you. Who do you think we'll see out there opening night?
Yeah, so going from 5 to 4 and on down, Jonas Valanciunas is the starting center. Jaren Jackson Jr. is the starting four. Sorry, I dropped my microphone there. Jonas Valanciunas is the starting center. Jaren Jackson Jr. is the starting four. I'm going to say Jay Crowder is the starter at the three. I'll say Dylan Brooks is the starter at the two. And the obvious answer is that John Morant is the starter at the point. But Tyus Jones might be better than him out of the gate. And I don't know what this coaching staff's philosophy will be or how much the front office will force their hand. But they might actually you know, weigh the possibility of giving Tyus Jones some starts, because he's a good point guard. He's going to be a better point guard for the first couple of months than John Morant. I think they'll end up starting John Morant. But Tyus Jones is a good point guard, and like I said, he might be a better point guard, at least at the beginning, than John Morant. Ultimately, I think John Morant will start, but it wouldn't absolutely blow my socks off if Tyus Jones ends up logging some starts at some point this season. I know fans wouldn't really appreciate that, but so for night one, yeah, I think John Morant will start, but Tyus Jones is going to be right there. That guy, he's a well-established point guard in the state. So if we're going off the bench, he'll be if not first, very early off the bench. And then I guess the other guys that would be quickly off the bench for me would be Kyle Anderson and Brandon Clark. I think that's he's got to be. So after that, I think things are up for grabs. But that's kind of, I guess, eight names, I believe, who I think are surefire bets to be a part of this rotation.
I think you're right on track there, and that's interesting note about Tyus Jones. And you're right, we don't really know what this coaching staff's going to do. Obviously, it's the first time for everybody, so it wouldn't shock me if Tyus Jones. I think it would shock a lot of fans, but like you mentioned, there would be reasoning for it, and you could justify it and say, hey, this is what we want to do going starting off, and Ja Morant would take over the job slowly. But that's an interesting take. And there's been some debate on obviously Dylan, Kyle, Jay, all that whole trio who will actually be at that three spot, and everybody's said a little bit different things, but mostly all the same rotation has been everybody thinks that's what's going to be. Real quick, win total for the Grizzlies. Vegas has them at 27.5. I think I put mine at 20 wins for the season, which is probably a little low, but I did every show, man. I went through every game, and I was struggling to find, games where they were going to win.
20.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. 2-0. Yeah. I know that's probably low. Probably more less. It's more like a 25 for me. But that's just where I went. I was going to the coach. I ended up with it. So.
Yeah. I'm below 27. I'm kind of in that 25 area. That's kind of my number. I don't think it's necessarily going to be pretty, but I think it'll be fun. I think especially the first few months of the season with the number of marquee games and the number of big home games, especially that they have in the first couple months, I think it'll be fun. Now, the second half of the season, they're on the road a lot. They're going to be needing to get better, but it might be hard to really show that with how much they're going to be on the road.
Sure.
Throughout February and March. But, 25 is kind of the number that I'm on at the moment.
Yeah, it's I think the highest number we've had is 31 wins, I think, is the highest number we've had so far. 31. That was Joe Mullinex. He's the holy optimist in everybody. I'm clearly the pessimist of the group.
Yeah.
Mine's been the lowest of everybody so far. But it'll just, like you said, it'll be a lot of losses, but it'll be fun. And that's really all that really matters. It's really just this year's, it's about getting better at the end of the year than where you started. And seeing enough of guys on this roster to be able to make informed decisions for the future. That's really what the year's about.
Hey, real quick, I wanted to add, I found my notes on Marco. And so while I was sort of, hesitant about his defensive abilities, one thing that did stand out to me from watching the tape, as I look back in my notes, I'm remembering several instances really during FIBA play. So granted, not NBA level, but in the FIBA play where he had really good defensive instincts. Now, he may not always have the physical tools to do what needs to be done, but there were a few instances where he jumped in the passing lane, was able to read the next play before it came to fruition, was able to get steals in transition by reading the eyes of the ball handlers, things like that that stood out and that could maybe, over the course of time, sort of mitigate the kind of defensive liability that he is. So I wanted to make sure to throw that in there too. I don't want to just totally, rain on the parade, and make it seem like he's a lost cause defensively. I think, with some of those instincts, he could over time develop into a competent.
Well, I definitely tell you this. It's given me more confidence in the idea of Marco Gudoch actually being consistent, getting consistent minutes and being a certain person that they can hopefully have some role player for the Grizzlies. Like, I honestly couldn't tell you, the first thing about him when they first signed him. I don't think anybody really could, and it took a while to even confirm the signing. So, hearing that from you makes me feel more comfortable. I mean, we'll find out here shortly, here in just a few weeks, what he can really do on the floor. I'm sure he'll get a lot of preseason action.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's coming up soon.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you taking the time out to join me again. David Cobb, beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. If you're not already reading his stuff over at commercialappeal.com, make sure you go and do so. It's easy to go over there and get all his stuff. Mark Giannotto and David Cobb, they're doing great stuff for the Grizzlies, covering all kinds of sports. 9-1-FC, Tigers, all kinds of stuff. Make sure you guys are going and checking that stuff out. David, I appreciate it. We'll do it again soon, man.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, man.